Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
So you take two out of three from Detroit, but you leave with a bad taste in your mouth with another Helsey bullpen disaster. And you see
and another starting pitcher that doesn't go past five innings.
Right. So it gives you just one more reminder as you have a couple of really good outings and good games. And you're like, oh, man, all right, you got Nolan McClain pitching great. You got the offense pitching great. But it just doesn't take so long until the issues with this team crop up and you see them both in the same game with the starting pitching not going deep into a game and then a bullpen blowing it. You know, when you have a guy as talented as Helsley is and you traded for him and he's part of the plan that's going to get you back to the NLCS in the World Series and he's been this bad and you don't have a full season to try to figure it out, I'm not sure exactly what you do.
What do you do with Soto? And I'm not talking about Juan Soto. I'm talking about Gregory Soto.
Yeah, I was going to say. Another one. Yeah, he stinks. But Helsley, though, he was supposed to mean so much more to this team than Gregory Soto was. So it's like you can't just completely give up on the guy.
No, you
can't. The ceiling is so high, and if he does figure it out, it's such a weapon. But, I mean, essentially every Met fan that I heard talking about this yesterday and I talked to is ready to just release him, to flat out DFA the guy because he has been that bad. And it's true. I mean, he's got an over 11 ERA. You could make the argument that he has been worse than Edwin Diaz in his first season as a Met over any stretch that Edwin Diaz
had. Well, after his first couple of performances, yes. The last bunch of performances have been horrific. I guarantee you, if you DFA'd him, one of these other teams would pick him up in a heartbeat.
You can't do that. And then he probably pitched great for him.
So you got to kind of fight through it with these guys. And again, I just keep saying it comes down to September, you know, and everybody's different. Everybody's more focused. Everybody's working on different things. And you hope that somehow, some way, he can get his confidence back. I just, you know, watching this thing unfold yesterday, this is the Met nightmare. This is the Met, you know, the starting pitcher doesn't go five innings. In comes the bullpen. It's a wild pitch. It's a hit. It's a home run. I mean, you know, it's a walk. I mean, it's everything that is, as a Met fan, that I don't want to see. And it's unfortunately that is now a part of this team. And this is why guys like McClain and Tong are so important, because at least it looks like, well, Tong only once, but I mean, McClain, you know, is going to give you those extra innings and you're going to get to your other high leverage relievers who obviously are pitching better.
And Kodai Senga, apparently the Mets are thinking about asking him to take a minor league assignment. He would have to agree to that. They can't just send him down. He would have to give permission to do that. But if I'm him and I'm the Mets, I mean, I'm asking him, and I don't care if he's offended or not. And if I'm Kodai Senga, I'm like, hell, I mean, I stink right now. And if this is what the team wants me to do to figure this out and the money that they paid me to come here and be an ace, then I got to do it.
I mean, that would be a really unselfish thing of him, and that would be something that I think all of us would appreciate. If he says no and he stays here and he continues to pitch the way he is, he's going to get booed off the mound. If you go down, you do a couple starts, you start getting some of your confidence back, you feel better about yourself, much like, you know, when they sent down Francisco Alvarez.
Yeah.
They sent him down. Remember we were talking about it. Send the guy down, and I know this is what the Yankee fan wanted with Volpe. They wanted to send him down, too.
Yeah.
And they decided not to. But I, you know, the whole thing about Alvarez, we were all in lockstep with that. And now this is a different story now. This would be a really unselfish move on his part. And I think if he's real with himself, it may be the right thing.
And the goal is for him to go down there and come back and be a big part of the postseason rotation. It's not to go down there and then go into oblivion. I mean, the whole point of the Mets sending him down would be to get him right so he can be the ace that he's expected to be. So if I'm him, I'm saying, okay, fine. All right, just a different route to get me better, and I'm not killing the team in this race to a wild card.
It's hard for a guy like that to do that. But again, that's why I said it would be really unselfish if he was accepting of it. And if he was accepting of it, I would like to believe that all of us would appreciate that and would, when he came back, we would hope that he would be the guy that, you know, he's supposed to be.
And Mike Puma said that the Mets will know by Friday if Senga is willing to accept a minor's assignment. So
if he doesn't and he pitches the way he is, man, it's going to be rough on him.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody's just going to get even more annoyed.
I would just say if he doesn't go down and it comes out and he pitches well, that's okay. Then everybody would be okay with that. But if he doesn't go down and comes out and pitches like he's been pitching over the last month and a half or 2 months, he's going to get booed off the mound.
I mean, isn't it amazing with these relievers, back to Helsley and Williams for a second, how just volatile they can be from year to year or even in season? I mean, Devin Williams' season last year was off the charts. Great. Helsley was mowing people down as a member of the Cardinals. He comes here and he doesn't know how to pitch. Devin Williams has had probably 85 to 90% of his season be crap. I mean, it's just relievers in baseball could be the most up and down volatile position in pro sports these days. You can go from great to awful.
Yeah.
Like that.
And I think that's what the Mets and the Yankees both were hoping, that they were bringing in quality arms, and that those arms would be a hell of a lot more consistent than they have been. And we're going through it with basically both staffs.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Obviously, all of us Mets fans are jacked up about Nolan McLean. And for those of us who are older, he does remind us of a Hall of Fame pitcher that pitched for the Mets when he was younger and was a fireballing fastballer and had a presence on the mound. Now, Nolan's a little bit bigger than the player that I'm talking about, and unfortunately, the player that I'm talking about is a player who died during COVID, Tom Seaver. And he has, I'm telling you, physically, they look very, very similar. Their windups are very similar. Their deliveries are very similar. And I know it's only four games into this young man's career, but he has what I would call a little bit of grit. And that's what you need. You need competitive grit.
So you got him now. Your comp to Nolan McLean is Tom Seaver, the greatest player in the history of the organization.
And also one of my favorite players growing up.
I mean, that's
saying they look similar. They look, I'm not saying he's going to have a 15, 20-year career. I'm not going to say he's going to strike out 300 guys in a season. I'm just telling you, he looks very similar.
You're talking about like mechanics
and the way he delivers the baseball. And maybe that's a good thing, because maybe that will alleviate the potential arm problems that usually hit these guys, you know, around this age.
Knock it on wood. I mean, you're just getting out of control. This is an over your skis spot right now.
No, it's not.
You already got him being healthy for his entire career and also comparing him to Tom Seaver. And every time that a young pitcher comes up that throws hard, you're like, has he had Tommy John yet? That's going to happen next 6 months. This guy now, because you're all fired up, it's like he's going to not have any injuries because he's Tom Seaver. I mean, for God's sakes.
Hey.
I mean, geez.
Hey, I didn't say.
You go lightning in a bottle.
Hey, yeah, lightning in a bottle. That's exactly what it is. And Jerry,
he does have the it factor.
Thank you, Jerry.
I'm not calling him Tom Seaver.
I'm just saying.
But he does seem like he's got the it factor.
Can I say, look, Craig gave me a statue of Tom Seaver.
Yeah.
Right? In that, just that great pose of when he's delivering that baseball and he's all stretched out and that back knee touches the ground. I mean, this kid has that type of delivery. That's all I'm saying.
He does have one of the nastiest pitches I've ever seen.
I'm just telling you, he has that type of delivery.
Yeah. You know, when Luis Torrens hit that home run last night, you know what I said to myself?
Oh, don't do that.
Guy reminds me of Mike Piazza.
Yeah.
By the way, opposite field, line drive to right. It kind of did.
Look like Piazza.
You know what? More like Jerry Grody in my eyes. I mean, come on, guys. Look at that.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the Tom Seaver delivery. I think that even Mets fans that didn't see him pitch understand how special he is to the organization and what he looked like when he pitched. But, I mean, it just seems like a little much right
now.
Look,
I didn't say, you know, again, you're twisting my words.
How am I twisting your words? Does it remind you of Tom Seaver?
Yeah, because of the way he looks on the mound and the way that he delivers the baseball and the way that he stretches himself out. And, you know, every pitcher will tell you that, and every athlete will tell you, your lower half is what gets you to where you are when you're trying to deliver either a football or a baseball. I mean, you just gotta use that lower half of your body, and nobody did that better than Tom Seaver. Maybe Nolan Ryan.
The beginning of the warm up show compared to the beginning of our show, where Al goes, I can't get excited about anything. This kid, this pitcher, I can't get excited about him. I gotta say, I've seen it so many times,
and then
you get the 6:15, 6. We got Boomer calling him Tom Seaver.
Literally next year in April, we're gonna be like, who was that guy again? McClutherness? No. I have no idea who this guy is next year.
You better hope you do know who he is next year.
Oh, man, I do. I look.
He does look the part.
The 4-game sample is pretty damn impressive.
Why this shouldn't be lightning in a bottle? Because he comes with a lot behind him. This isn't like some kid you just elevated hoping for a spot start, and he's been really good for 4 starts. Oh, maybe we have something. He's supposed to be good.
You know, and the other thing, too, is that he was also a football player at Oklahoma State. He played football and baseball.
See, with the words that Jerry he's using, I can get on board with. Looks like he's got the it factor. Looks the part. You're going Tom Seaver.
He looks just
Nolan
like
Ryan.
Him.
And Nolan Ryan.
He looks just like the two of them.
I was thinking Warren Spahn myself.
I mean, just...
You know, you guys maybe try to ruin my childhood. My childhood was Nolan Ryan and Tom Seaver and Jerry Guzman. And I don't want to hear
He's in great company right there.
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah. Well, guys strike out a lot more now.
That is true.
Oh, now it's just going to...
It's still pretty impressive, though.
Hey, the guy's been great. I just can't go Tom Seaver after 4 starts.
I didn't say he's going to be Tom Seaver. I'm just saying he has similar traits on the mound. That's all I'm saying.
Do you think they're working on the Nolan McClain statue right now? Or no, they're going to wait maybe a couple more starts.
You know, his name is Nolan, like Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, I know. I've seen that. And by the way, he does have a nickname, apparently. Already.
Seaves.
Sorry.
What?
Little Seaves. No, apparently.
You guys are just, you're just trying to take away a young man's start and
no way
the impact he's had.
And you're
trying to discount it. No.
Matter of fact, it was appointment TV last night.
Yeah.
So that's not true.
I mean, I said all these great things in the open.
Except for Al.
Well, yeah, but we know that.
I was watching some stupid documentary.
Was he murdered on the mound? Then he'd watch.
No, I said all the great things. The Tom Seaver comparison is just a little much this early. That's all. Just a little much.
All I said is that he looks like him on the mound. The delivery.
You also said he's not going to get hurt because he looks like Tom Seaver.
Well, maybe there's something to like using your lower body and taking some of the pressure off your arm and pitching correctly.
So
what is wrong with that?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Howie Gersberger used to teach us the rotation drill.
Yeah.
Where you would hold the ball like this and you'd warm up as I hold my hands together up around my chest.
Mm.
And since I was left-handed, I would take the ball and I would do this and I would come over the top and throw it. Because that was the way that you would protect your arm. You would learn how to throw the freaking baseball.
MLB needs more Harry Gershberger.
I mean, listen, I wasn't over there keeping a book.
Howie Gershberger.
I was out there on the mound striking people out. Yeah. All right?
Okay.
Mr. Bookkeeper.
Hey, I was hurt.
He's Tommy John's kryptonite. So you can't seriously think that these guys won't get hurt if they just, like, about...
That's a warm-up. That's to make sure that you fundamentally throw the ball correctly. But these guys are all throwing splitters and cutters and ghost effing fork balls that don't go over the plate and nobody's chasing anymore. They're nibblers. All right, Jerry, here.
You still look like you were doing an interpretive you ready? Dance.
You ready? I don't have a glove.
Here comes a goddamn fastball right in your face.
That's not funny.
All right.
It was funny last night when Framber Valdez hit his catcher. That's all I got to tell you that much. That was pretty funny.
And that did look on purpose. I don't care what they say.
No, 100%. The way he turned around, because usually if there's a cross-up, it's like, hey, what happened? Oh, sorry, or my bad, whatever. They turned right around like, screw you.
That sucked
up. You earned that. Oh, all right, Jerry, we're a little late here, but I know you got some good stuff, so let's hear it.
We're brought to you by Surf Pro Cleanup, Restoration, and Connection. Visit surfpro.com. Tom Seaver lookalike last night was at it. As the Mets beat the Tigers 12-2.
Let me just take that away from you. Because that will shatter.
Boomer's just throwing things at Jerry now during his update. And he's doing it in a way that's not going to allow him to get hurt.
12. Give it time.
Someone's I'm saying Boomer's arm. Not you. You're going to get hurt. But Boomer's form is so great while he's throwing stuff at you. He's not going to hurt himself.
Anyway, 12-5 was the final. Along the way, Nolan McLean got a lot of run support, including this big home run from the Mike Piazza lookalike.
Right-hander from the belt. McNeil's dancing off first. Back towards the bag. Gibson Long comes home, and Terence shoots one to the corner and right. Carpenter over. He turns, and it's off the pole and gone. A three-run laser for Luis Terence.
And that was Pat McCarthy.
By the way, you know who would back up my Howie Gershberger rotation drill? You know who would back that up?
Who's that?
Both Frank Viola and John Franco.
Okay.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll get to the Mets in just a second, but I did see a little note here from the Yankees BT, newsworthy. Okay. As you know, Aaron Boone joins Talking Yanks podcast every Tuesday. Giancarlo Stanton going to be in left field tonight in Houston.
That makes sense. He was there in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Smaller fence. It's basically like, you know, him in right field for Yankees. They're only smaller. So that makes sense.
So Stanton has not played left field since September of 2023 in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Another short
fence. That's a long time ago. Boone also added that Aaron Judge is getting close to playing the field, but they don't have a date set yet.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to mess that one up again there, Booty, with Aaron Judge with the timeline.
I mean, how about Judge? Are we getting out there or not? You ripped the manager because he said that you weren't going to be 100%. Season's almost over, bro. You got 20-something games to go.
No, he's just starting to hit. I mean, that's all I care about. Like, listen, we can say whatever we want. Obviously, if Aaron Judge could throw the baseball properly, he would be in right field. Anybody that doubts his commitment to getting back to right field is flat-out nuts.
My issue is not doubting his commitment. It's that he ripped the manager for saying that he didn't say he wasn't going to come back. Mm-hmm. He just said that he doesn't think he's going to be 100% at all this year.
Yeah.
That was weeks ago. He hasn't even set foot in the outfield. So, so you ripped the manager for saying something accurate? It's not his fault you're hurt.
Well, the thing that bothered me about that was, you know, when I didn't think it was a great look for Aaron when he said, you know, I haven't seen him throw yet.
Right.
That was the thing that jumped out to me. And then obviously Judge's response, you and I talked about this a little bit. I felt like he threw Aaron under the bus. I mean, Aaron's been, you know, really going out of his way. That's his style. That's his managerial style, to protect the guys in the clubhouse and the locker room and keep it sacred and not railroad him in the press. And then I thought Aaron's words got away from him. I think they also seem a little more harsh and black and white than the actual tone when you listen to it. But it wasn't a great look for Aaron Judge. I don't dispute that.
Yeah, well, and the point is, he still, weeks later, still hasn't been in the outfield. And the problem is that now you're going to have a situation where you get John Carl Stanton in left field, where he's done a nice job, but he's not an outfielder at this point in his career. He can't do it consecutively. You hold your breath and say, well, the guy's doing something he hasn't done in 2 years, playing the outfield since 2023.
Talking about playing left field, yeah.
Yeah, playing the left field.
I listen, you get him out there, you pick your spots. It's obviously not ideal, and this is going to be a series. I don't want to get to the Mets too here, obviously, but this is going to be a series where we're going to start to learn a little bit more about these Yankees. You would have loved to have swept the White Sox. Instead, you get 3 out of 4. You know, you obviously beat a bad team before that, but this is really judgment time for the Yankees. And if Stanton could give you anything on a short field, whether it's Fenway in the left, whether it's in Houston in the left, whether it's in right in the Bronx, you know, it can preserve his body, and it gives him a chance to play both Judge and Stanton, which is what we're looking
for.
That's
what you have to have. You have to have both their bats in the lineup. So obviously we understand that, and that's why he's going to be in left field tonight. All right, as it pertains to the Mets, a big win yesterday. The conversation we've had all year long has been about Juan Soto and how it's been a quote-unquote down year for Soto. And to me, the only real, you can talk about the batting average, it's fine, but the only real tangible thing that would say that it was a down year for him was the fact that he was not hitting with runners in scoring position, which is something that everybody expected that he was eventually going to do. Well, he's now starting to do that to the tune of a ridiculous level that now, when you look at his numbers, and it's not just because he's been hot with runners in scoring position for the last, I don't know, 10 games, whatever it's been exactly, his numbers overall, like, he's having not only, I was going to say historic season in baseball overall, which could end up being that, but certainly one of the great seasons we've ever seen from a New York Met, period, end of story.
I don't disagree, but I'm not surprised. I mean, listen, the frustration, I can't speak for anybody but myself, the frustration for me with Juan Soto was the sluggish start. And when you sign that kind of a contract, that's just the way it goes. Like, Beltran got booed year one, 16 home runs, big deal, not good enough, wake up. It's happened to Yankees as well, and it's going to always happen. That's just the way it goes. So, you know, April, I know it's an antiquated stat, but when I see 230 next to Juan Soto's name in April, that's unacceptable because he's too good for that. When I see in the month of May hit 219, I'm like, that's not Juan Soto. I never once thought Juan Soto wouldn't wake up. But to me, that's burying the lead because Juan Soto is an amazing hitter and Juan Soto's on a tear. And now I watch Juan Soto dig into the box and I expect Juan Soto to absolutely do damage. That's not the problem with the Mets. The problem with the Mets is outside of McLain, their pitching staff stinks. So it, like...
Well, it's not the problem, but it is a big deal because it's been the major talking point all year with Soto. Like, we'll get to the pitching in a second. We do have to acknowledge... Dude,
he's been phenomenal. But, I know. He's been great.
But he's going to have... But
been great.
No, not just great. Like, he's going to have 40... He's got 36 homers.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have 40 homers, and he's going to get 100 ribbies, which is unbelievable to think about where he was at with runners in scoring position. You're talking about 40 and 100. It may be different for the Yankees. It's that's not often for the
Mets. I get it.
Not to mention he's got 26 stolen bases, leads the league in walks, 100 runs scored. Like, this is a freaking phenomenal year, even with the slow start in April. I remember getting on for the first 20 games, and it was reacting to his poor performance in those 20 games, never doubting that he was going to get it turned on, but turned on to this level. This is a ridiculous season for Juan Soto, numbers-wise. Fill in the box with all kinds of stats.
Listen, I think next year, and if there's no work stoppage after that, I think Juan Soto has a year or two or three or four where he hits 290-something, 302, 303. Like, I expect that out of Juan Soto. But there's a fine line for me. Whilst there's no doubt his season in totality has been, I mean, it's up there. I saw some credit, like maybe the first ever to do whatever, this and the 40 home runs, 30 steals, 100 runs, 100 RBIs. And there was one other component, whatever it was, maybe it wasn't 200 hits, whatever it was. He's obviously starting to flirt with some stuff that's amazing. But that does, it's not like those of us, and you were one of them, and I was certainly one of them, that were criticizing his start were wrong.
Right.
He has just turned it up to a level that has now changed the tone of the conversation, which I fully expected to happen. He's Juan Soto. Right. There was a reason why the Yankees wanted to give him 750 and the Mets gave him 755. I mean, this is not a mid-level player who was having a big-time season. He's Juan Soto.
Right,
He's supposed to.
But there was a lot of criticism towards Soto and his slow season or his down season.
And rightfully so.
But that's where I'm going to disagree. I got on him for the first 20 games of the season.
Yep.
There were people who were doubting that he was going to do this, number one, wrong. And number two, just saying overall his numbers are going to be down. His numbers are not. Batting average, yes. Everything else, or up.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But understood, like, let's, if Juan Soto, is on pace for 120. Mike, there are guys in baseball that have 100 RBIs already.
Right.
One of them is his teammate.
Right.
Pete Alonso. So he's going to get to 100 RBIs, and based on what he did yesterday, maybe 103, 104, 105. He's on a ridiculous tear.
His career high is 110.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So if he gets to 100...
His career high homers is 41.
I understand. No, I understand. The home runs, he's been on an absolute vicious tear with the home runs. But that doesn't change anything that I've thought or others have thought, because I never once said that he's not going to wake up. Now, those of like people who said Juan Soto's destined to have a Beltran-type year one with the Mets... Well, then they need to get on the apology tour. What I was saying, two very different things. Dude, you're getting $50 million a year. Act like it, which he now is, which is good to see for the Mets.
Well, yeah.
And the second component was, did I ever believe that he would wake up and put numbers that were in the neighborhood of what he usually does? And just for me, my answer was, yeah. Now, it was frustrating watching him crawl and fail in clutch situations, but to close the door on Juan Soto... You're an idiot. Well, I don't know what to tell people. You didn't think he was going to wake up and hit?
Well, there's a lot of people calling him Juan Solo. I mean, that's a ridiculous notion as well. Like, no, he's had a terrific first year with the Mets. I mean, could it be better? I mean, I guess. But at the end of it, he's going to do something that maybe no other Met ever has done, depending on where he finishes with the stolen bases and home runs and RBI. But he's on pace for, you know, his historic season from a Mets perspective in year one, even with his slow start, a quote-unquote down year. And the best is yet to come for me, and that's the only thing that matters, because what happens prior to today really doesn't mean anything, mm-hmm. and what happens before October really doesn't mean anything.
Yep.
If he struggles in October, that's going to be the focal point. If he goes nuts in October, that's going to be the focal point. But he is now showing, like, the last thing that we needed to see from my perspective was hitting with guys on base. He's done that at an absurd level over the last couple of weeks.
He has, and it's changed the tenor of how his season is perceived. But again, there was a point where he literally had the worst average with runners in scoring position. So I'm just making sure we get some separation. What was said about Juan Soto was never inaccurate. I think what either frustrated some or confused others was whether or not Juan Soto would go back to being Juan Soto. For me, I always thought that he would. For the others, I don't think they really know baseball. They didn't really watch Juan play for the Nationals or for the Yankees last year. This is not surprising.
Right.
This is what he's supposed to do.
Oh, no,
one of the best in baseball.
But we did. Well, yes, agree. But you and I have had some arguments where maybe it didn't feel like that from your perspective.
No, but hold on. I agree. But they weren't arguments. I think they were debates, number one. And they were debates about what he was doing at that moment, which was at that point the worst average with runners in scoring position. I didn't just pull that out of thin air.
Right, but
if Aaron Judge had the worst average, worst RI, worst RISP, I'd be like, dude, what? Wake up. What the hell are you doing?
Right.
Wake up.
But when it was the one thing missing and we both said it was going to change, then look at the season overall. Like,
yes, and that's why I'm saying it's been phenomenal.
Juan Soto has received more criticism this year than any Met that I could recall that it's had, maybe ever, it's had this type of year.
I probably agree with that.
Like, this is absurd.
I agree with that.
This is not Beltran year one who had 15 or 16 home runs, whatever it was.
Yep.
Like, this guy's going to, he's going to end up with 40 and 100 and lead the league in walks and have 100 runs scored. Like,
yeah, but Sal, think about this. You shouldn't be, maybe it was unfair to an extent. Although some of the early, again, I don't want to keep it. The early numbers with Juan, they were what they were. And people out
he's
there.
He's not worth the contract.
No, yeah, well, that's where you knew, you just knew. Now, if he came from the Padres or the Dodgers for that money, it would have been crazy hype and crazy and maybe at times unfair analysis or overreactions. The fact that he came from the Yankees for that amount of money, there was no escaping this. So it was up to him to prove that he's Juan Soto, which I always knew that he would. The onus wasn't on me to provide reasons why he's hitting 220 in May.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that wasn't on me to do that.
Here's, I guess, the biggest argument that you and I have had. Now, I'm not saying that Juan Soto was some complete overall player. However, if, and this is still an if, because there's 4 games to go and he's got to finish these numbers. Somebody was sending me this tweet before. If Juan Soto gets to 40 homers, he's got 36 right now.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets to 30 stolen bases, he's got 26
right
now.
This is what I was trying to reference before. This is a good one.
Yeah. And yep. and
40 bombs, 30 steals, yep.
All right, 40, 30 steals, and 100 ribbies, he's got 90. It would be one of the most complete seasons since 2000. 40 homers, 30 steals, 100 ribbies, 100 runs scored, 100 walks has not been done since Bonds and Bagwell. Bonds did it in 96 and 97, and Bagwell did it in 97 and 99.
That's on juice, by the way. We think, allegedly, right? Who knows what was going on back then? Yeah, allegedly, let's slide that in there, Major. No, listen.
That was the assumption.
Think about, though, now let's just juxtapose Juan Soto's season. Let's say that Juan Soto came out in April playing like this.
Right.
Then everybody would have been fair to him unless they were just trolls.
And it wasn't just April, to your point, because I remember saying, okay, well, now it's going to be the Yankee series, and he was awful in that Yankee series.
Dude, he hit 219 in May.
I get it, but he had an all-time June.
No question. Player of the month.
He's been on some kind of tear now that
normal
players can't go on.
I'm expecting him, when he digs in, I am expecting him to barrel one to the moon these days.
All right, now.
That's what I feel about Soto.
Now for the big issue, now that we've got
the
that
real issue.
He's not.
From a team perspective. He's not an issue. Soto's an asset.
All right, so we know it's the rotation. I'd be curious to get your take on this. I've been giving this a lot of thought over the last 2 weeks, you know, spending a lot of time off, whether it's walking the dog, sitting in the pool, watching the game, thinking about it.
Well, your dog is a lot of energy. Sal doesn't, because we're at the barbecue, you know, half of the family's there, a couple weeks. Like, you can't just say, oh, Maddox, like, he's up your ass. You got to take Maddox.
You throw the wiffle ball, you hit it, he's going to get it.
He wants attention, that pooch, huh?
So trying to walk him and play ball. Anyway, so I'm thinking about the rotation. What would you do to fix it? For me, like, I think the Mets are going to make the playoffs. They're four up on the Reds. Okay,
so let's they're up four. Yeah.
And by the way, that's a whole other conversation. Like, is it good enough to just back into the playoffs? Don't really care if you do the proper damage in the postseason.
Correct.
Just get there.
That's a end of the year conversation.
Correct. Okay, you want to win the division? Likely not going to happen.
Yep.
Just get to the playoffs. And I do think they're going to benefit from getting there where things get crunched, okay? Mm-hmm. Shorter postseason, you know, shorter series. You don't have to have five or six starters.
Agreed.
So assuming they get there, the issue that I have is I cannot start. No, let me rephrase that. I cannot pitch Kodai Senga. He's out of the picture for me. He's not going to be good out of the bullpen. I'm not messing with that, and I'm not having him start a game. So as of right now, September 2nd, whatever it is, I'm not having him in the rotation. McLean would be one. This is game one.
Yep.
Peterson, you could, if you want to have Peterson game one, that's fine too. I'd go McLean one, Peterson two. I would go Clay Holmes three. I would move Manaea to the bullpen and try to use Manaea as a weapon out of the pen. That gives you Manaea, Diaz, Raley, Soto, Rogers, at least five right there. Helsley's got some time to get himself right. As of now, I don't know how you could trust him.
God, dude, even the balls yesterday on the screws, right down the line, even the out, I mean, good God.
He's worth trying to squeeze whatever is. He could be the last guy on the postseason roster, but he's still got, like, he's throwing 101.
And 102 he hit yesterday, by the way. 102. And he's probably tipping.
Okay.
That's what they were talking about yesterday again.
But still.
No, he's getting lit up, dude. He's a mess.
If you knew 102 was coming, it shouldn't be that easy to turn it around. And these guys are. So, point is, I feel pretty good with that. So my solution would be Senga out, IL, see you later, whatever, Manaea to the pen. Now, you also could call up Sproat. You have Tong in this situation, Tyler McGill coming back. Those could be useful arms when you're trying to put together a staff for the postseason. But as far as the starting rotation goes, I would immediately take Senga out and replace him with Sproat, and I take Manaea out, move him to the pen, and replace him with Tyler McGill when he comes back.
I have no issue moving Manaea to the pen. My fear is that he's actually just not healthy. So even if you move him to the pen, what kind of results do you get? I mean, first pitch yesterday, moonshot, bullet home run. He's been awful. Peterson, who I've always really trusted, has been awful. Obviously, Senga's a mess. Listen, I'm with you on your instincts on Senga. Like, if I'm the Mets, enough of the training wheels, enough of trying to placate this guy. Dude, you are in major. This is year three. This is not year one transitioning from foreign baseball. You are now here. You should know the deal. You should know how to prep yourself in between starts. And they very well might six-man rotation. Stop trying to move mountains for a guy who nibbles and just can't get through five without throwing 80 pitches. I am not doing anything. So I guess I'm with you with Senga. He is incredibly frustrating to watch. I don't care if he ever pitches again. Push him aside. I'm not trying to save him. I'm not trying to salvage him. I don't trust him. I don't believe in him. And I really always liked Senga more than you. Done with Senga.
And how are you going to get him? Like, at least Helsley, you could make the case, okay, well, you put him in for an inning.
Yeah, like 7-1 game, 6-2,
With Senga, what are you going to do? You can't start him. That's
No,
if
you can't.
If they start him again, they need their heads examined. You cannot start him. I don't think he's pitchable. But if you then, okay, let's say we're going to put him in the bullpen. You're going to put Senga in the bullpen?
Not the way he's a creature of habit. And that's part of the problem. And listen, I understand when you bring somebody over from Japan, you want to hasten the transition. You want to do what you have to do. You know, really manipulate that off day so it almost replicates the six-man rotation that he was used to. Yeah, I get it. But the greater good, and they know this. This is why I think the Mets will ultimately make the right decision. It's not about holding his hand forever. It's about winning a World Series.
Correct.
And the guy that you're running out right now is batting practice. He stinks.
You can't do it. Worry about him in the offseason or next year. You can't worry about his ego right now. Helsley, the reason why I feel, like I said, I think it's at least worth trying to salvage because you're not going to have many better options. You're talking about at this point, Stanek, Reed, Garrett. You got to have some guys. You got to find 14 guys come postseason time. We could get into the conversation about Jonah Tong as well and maybe Sproat when we come back. But I think it's salvageable once they get to the postseason as far as getting there. I mean, his body, you know.
They're going to get there. You're right. The Reds, even though the Reds came back and won that game yesterday, right? The Reds are four back, as you
Phillies
said.
Phillies and Reds both came back yesterday.
Yeah, so the Phillies. The Reds came back. I think they gave up a home run late. They were down 3-2 in the night. They came back and they won it, right? So, I mean, listen, yesterday was a weird game. Mets come out. The bats are clicking right away. Manaea had nothing. Then we went through the mechanics of the game to an extent here. But this is no longer sustainable. They've got to make some tough decisions. I believe that they will. I do want to get into this coming up. I do worry. There should be nothing thought of. There should be no internal debate. Game one, playoffs, McClain must get the baseball. I don't know if they'll acquiesce to him as a rookie. If they don't, they're nuts. He's special. He's by far the best pitcher on the team. It's not even close.
We have Anthony Becht coming up at 11 o'clock. He does the Jets, so we'll have some fun talking some Jets with him. We have Ian Eagle coming up at 11:40, one of my all-time favorite people and favorite broadcasters. He's on the Jets game this weekend as well with his new partner, J.J. Watts. We'll have some fun talking to Ian a little bit later on next hour as well. There is some Mets news, BT, that I wanted to get to. Andy Martino of SNY reporting. Now, he says Brandon Sproat is in, quote, strong consideration for a start with the Mets. That's what he's saying there. I'm going to use my term and say that Brandon Sproat's going to start. It's just a matter of when. I mean, he wouldn't say that if it weren't a real possibility.
Yeah, I would agree.
Now, the reason maybe why he's hesitant to say he is going to start is because the Mets haven't definitively named a starter for Sunday. Mm-hmm. We know about Peterson Friday, Tong on Saturday. Andy writes that it's possible that Nolan McClain starts on Sunday with Manaea opening the series against the Phillies on Monday. But a Sproat promotion could lead things to be flipped around a little bit. Now, remember, Kodai Senga also factors in here, too. Andy writes, the team's waiting to see if Senga is going to accept the temporary assignment to the minor leagues. So now, with all that being said, I believe Senga is going to be jettisoned to the minors. He better. They're going to start Sproat on Sunday and then push McClain and Manaea against the Phillies. That's the way that I would do it. That's, I think, what they should do.
That's probably what they want to do. Yeah, you just have to wait for the legality because, unfortunately, legality is not probably the right word, but the consent by Senga to go to the minors. And if he doesn't, that's a horrendous look here. So I know there's pride, and the last thing Senga wants to do is go down to the minors and tweak stuff and work on stuff in the middle of a pennant race here, but you've got to do what you've got to do for the betterment of the team here. I would be stunned if he resists it and does not consent and go down, which would open up the door for, as you laid out, probably, I think it would be, you said Sproat
Sunday,
and then McClain on Monday.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is because do the math. Now, Hoff, maybe you could help me out with this.
What about Manaea, though?
Well, they would push him back against the Phillies as well.
Like into Tuesday?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the other way, why would you have McClain start Sunday, and you got a four-game series with the Phillies coming up? And I'm not saying you got to go chase the division, but if I want McClain to pitch, I want to pitch against the Phillies, not against the Reds. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. The Reds are all but done.
Oh, forget about the Reds. It's the Giants now that you guys got to keep an eye on.
Giants are hot. All of a sudden, they're hot four games back. When was McClain's last start here? When was it, BTS?
He went 3 days ago. I feel like it was 3 days ago.
I'm forgetting.
The Detroit game on Monday.
Labor Day, right. Ago. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it would be his normal day on Sunday to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So then in that factor, but then now you're going to call up. Let's just say that they do have McClain pitch his normal day Sunday.
Yep.
you're going to have Sproat come up against the Phillies? Like, I would not do that.
Well, I mean, they threw, think about where they threw McClain out. They threw him against the Braves down in Atlanta. They threw him early on against the Phillies.
Hoff screwed that up right there. Tuesday.
I did, yes.
That's okay. So that does change things. Because I didn't think that that was right, McClain, on his normal day. Then it wouldn't be a conversation. So if McClain pitched Tuesday, right, Hoff, Tuesday night.
Then Sunday would be regular rest.
No.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, fifth day would be Sunday. If he pitched Tuesday.
It would be regular rest. Now I screwed up. So now
here's what we know. You don't want to see Senga, and you really don't want to see Manaea.
Yeah, so Sunday would be the normal day.
Screw that up.
I would push, push McClain back against the Phillies.
To face the Phillies.
And Manaea, give him even extra rest, push him back against the Phillies.
Okay.
And then I would bring up Sproat to have him make the start on Sunday.
Against the Reds.
In Senga's spot. But wasn't Sunday Senga's spot? That's why I'm confused with this whole thing. So where are we getting on normal rest? They were going with the 6-man rotation. Maybe that's
they were kicking that around as well. I mean, listen, we don't have great clarities. That's why it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
We could sit here and speculate this guy might throw here and this guy's up for that day and maybe you push back Manaea.
Was it Manaea who pitched Monday then?
Until Senga tells the Mets, I'm good going to the minors, then these are just plans that could be thrown into the incinerator fast.
Either way, the report is basically that Sproat is...
Yeah, he's going to join the party.
Yeah, at some point. And once he does, then it becomes eligible for the postseason as well.
There you go.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Back to the Yankees. Vinny is calling from Long Island. What's up, Vinny?
Vin.
What's going on, boys? Good to talk to you.
How are you, Vin?
Thanks, pal.
Good. So real quick, before I get to my couple of points, did I hear you guys mention that the umpire last night is a Boston Red Sox fan?
Well, unless he just has a Red Sox shirt and he just walks into bars and puts his arm around guys in Red Sox jerseys, then yeah, he's a Red Sox fan because we all saw the picture floating around.
If that's the case,
yeah,
that can't happen. Major League Baseball has to figure out a way to make sure if you have a fandom, you're not either umpiring in that league or at least in that type of series. That's point number one. Point number two, yeah, the umpiring was atrocious last night, and that pitch to Jazz at the end of the night was a disgrace.
Yep.
But you know what? A couple of points. I agree with you. It's the bullpen is very unnerving right now, and it's disappointing because this has been one of the strengths of the Yankees, and it's been a strength of Cashman over the years. I don't blame Cashman for this bullpen totally because everybody was amped about getting Williams. Everybody was amped about getting these guys in the bullpen during the trade deadline. So these guys just are not doing their job, and that's a scary thing. In regards to the teams that they're playing right now, I got to see them go 8-4. Not necessarily because of their psychological makeup on that, but just to kind of let the teams that they're playing know, we're going to see you in the playoffs, guys, and you're not going to own our ass.
Listen, I love it. I really do. I don't agree. And thanks for the call there, Vinny. That's why I'm not, and I didn't do this in the opening segment here. I'm not going to attach an absolute value. It will be nice to win every game there and go 11-1 of the 12 games against all these teams. It's not going to happen. I mean, you know, are they going to be 7-5? Yeah, okay, and if they're 7-5 and they lose a couple of very ugly games, is that offset by a couple of very impressive wins? I don't know. Like, we're trying to grade the aesthetics, right, of what these 12 games, you know, really to find an identity for the Yankees, but I don't know that we will. And I say that because let's say these 12 games don't go incredibly well. Well, guess what could change everything on a dime? Game one, wild card, right. Game one, DS, whatever. Schlittler takes the ball, throws a gem, 7 innings, no runs, Yanks up 1-0, everything changes. And I'm not trying to talk around their issues. They've got issues. We know that. We've talked about it all year. I'm just not as hung up as Vinny, and I'm sure as some others, as having to win 9-12, 10-12. Let's see. Tonight.
They're getting in the playoffs regardless, so it doesn't matter. I do think it's a good test to see. You know, Boone has said it himself, we're a different team right now than we were when we faced Toronto or Boston last.
Which is true, because McMahon's at third base, and they hit a lot of ground balls there.
Well, not just that, but also getting healthier, having Giancarlo Stanton be a big part of the lineup, having Stanton and Judge potentially in the lineup at the same time. Yankees playing much better baseball.
No question, but Toronto had a lot of soft singles that, and they, like, at third base, like, McMahon he's a rock star fielding. He really, that changes a lot. So, but keep going.
Yeah, well, no. So they were a different team. I want to see how they play against Toronto this time, because if they get beat this time, then it's like, Well, now what? Now, does that mean that they definitively couldn't beat Toronto in the postseason? Absolutely not. But I am curious to see. For me, it's the one last measuring stick left in the regular season. If they lose the series, if they win the series, it's not really going to change my opinion big picture. Mm-hmm. But I do want to see what this team's made of, how they play against two teams in Toronto and Boston who have dominated them this regular season.
Understood. You know, I do get it. And the Red Sox, that's where it started up in Fenway back
June
a few
13th,
months
ago. That weekend.
We'll get them those the exact date.
Well, because it's both the Mets and the Yankees. That's how I know. It's remarkable that both those teams, they've been mirroring each other. Even now, the Yankees back up, the Mets back up.
Yeah, like, and we came in and I wasn't overly concerned with that because I hadn't seen any sort of evidence that the Yankees were sloppy on the bases and they were a better defensive team, at least for the first up until June 13th. And that changed a lot, you know, certainly who I thought they were. But, you know, last night with Will Warren, you know, he was very good early in the year, a lot of strikeouts, and I believe he could be. And he was good last night. And I believe he could be really good down the road. I'm less concerned. Like, in my own mind, I'm almost like, I kind of expected Will to get knocked around a little bit, and he didn't. So that's why it's even more frustrating. Like, if Will Warren would have given up 5 runs and 4 2/3 and walked 3 guys, and the Yankees were losing 6-4 when he left the game, and like, I could accept that because Will Warren's not going to get a start in the playoffs here. But the way that they lost, those guys who blew up from the bullpen will be pitching the postseason, and that's not a great thing right now.
I want to take you back, Tiki, to your playing days. You were in the National Football League.
Yes, I
was. You were playing for the New York Football Giants. It was late August of 1999. You remember that?
I do.
While you weren't paying attention because you were getting ready for a football season, the New York Mets were trying to win, right? So they were being very aggressive. They were making all these trades before the trade deadline back in 1999. And they acquire a closer at the trade deadline, guy who had pretty good numbers with the Oakland A's, guy by the name of Billy Taylor. Good move. I remember when they made it. They traded a young pitcher named Jason Isringhausen.
Hey, Connecticut, if you want name...
All right. I guess that story was that boring. I'll get to the punchline. I apologize. They gave up Jason Isringhausen, who would go on and actually have a really good career. But at the moment, the Mets were trying to win. And so they brought in a closer who had 26 saves with the Oakland Athletics. And I remember liking the trade. Like, all right, that guy was Billy Taylor. And while you were preparing yourself for an NFL season, Billy Taylor was ending his major league career because he was really bad. He only ended up pitching 13 and a third innings. He gave up 12 runs. Ugh. And then Bobby Valentine wouldn't use him because he was just so bad. And I remember thinking, boy, that's relievers, man. You just don't know.
What happened with Isringhausen as where he went to?
Very successful career as a closer.
Of course.
Had a really good career. Now, Izzy was a big prospect. He had injuries, but we understood at the time why they were giving him up.
Right.
Now, let's flash back to now, 26 years later. When the Mets traded for Ryan Helsley, we all thought it was great. A closer, Billy Taylor had 26 saves. This guy had 28 saves or whatever it was this season. 21 saves. He was having a good year. 3 ERA, throws 102 miles an hour. And much like Billy Taylor, if not worse, in fact, the numbers are worse, Ryan Helsley forgot how to pitch. Because after he gave up a 3-run home run earlier today to the Tigers, the Mets losing 6-2, Ryan Helsley has now thrown 10 and 2/3 innings as a Met. He's given up 18 hits, 18 runs, 14 of them earned. He has an 11.81 ERA. Billy Taylor, I heard Sal mention his name a few weeks ago. He lives in Met history as just the example. Like, right. Nothing about his career other than, boy, that's the example where you never know. Ryan Helsley is making Billy Taylor look good.
Well, what happened with that Mets season, though?
They got to the National League Championship Series, and they lost to the Braves.
Okay, so it doesn't mean anything bad is going to happen for the team. Now, maybe you're going to be tired of seeing Ryan Helsley, and you don't want him to
tired?
Quit. I mean, tired? You're done with seeing Ryan Helsley.
I'm not an extremist.
It doesn't mean anything for the team currently.
Well, I'm talking about the trade and the player. Right. Obviously, this team can still be
sometimes
good.
Sometimes you miss on trades. It is what it is.
But you know what you have to do? And I give Bobby Valentine and Steve Phillips credit for this. They cut their losses.
Right. Sit them down. Done.
They knew it was over. And I think we have gotten to this point now where Ryan Helsley is unpitchable. You can't pitch him anymore. Good situation, bad situation, leverage, high leverage, low leverage. The guy is an abomination. And I could sit here and try to figure out why. Here's what I tell you. It doesn't matter why. Mm. It's too late. They're not fixing him in the next 3 weeks.
Right.
So what the Mets need to do is, I wouldn't even DFA him. Actually, you know what? I would DFA him because he wouldn't be eligible to be on another team's postseason roster.
Right.
So just get rid of him.
And he's also on a one. He's done.
He's done.
So it's he's not here to protect you against Edwin Diaz leaving. He was just here to give you help to try to get deep into the postseason.
Well, if he pitched well, maybe we would have thought that way. But he has been, again, he's worse than Billy Taylor. And for those that get it, you get it. He's numbers. I'm looking at him. Billy Taylor gave up 12 runs in 13 and a third innings. Helsley's given up 18 runs in 10 and two thirds innings.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So he can't pitch anymore. I just want to make that very, very clear. Hmm. Even positive Tommy agrees, right?
I don't agree.
Come on.
I don't agree with half of what you said there. I don't agree with getting rid of him.
What would you do? You can't pitch him, bro.
Bro, you can't pitch him.
The problem is that, and the reason you traded for him is because he has great stuff and you wanted another elite arm at the back end of the bullpen. If he's not there, who is the replacement? Meaning, you brought in Helsley to be the eighth inning guy. Who is your eighth inning guy in a big spot in October?
You have the same question today, whether he's on the roster or not on the roster, because you can't pitch him.
But if you could get him back to being the Ryan Helsley that he was, I don't know, a month ago?
How do you do that?
We've seen this with relievers, though. Even Devin Williams found himself, at least for a little bit, like relievers go up and down. Last year with the Mets, how many bullpen guys stunk early and then got better?
This is
a good pitcher.
You know what the difference is? And this is kind of a knock on Devin Williams. Mm. You may take this the wrong way about him. I think Devin Williams is proving he just can't pitch here. Like, when the spot is higher leverage, right, when the situation is riskier, when the situation is more clutch, he melts in the moment. When you put him into a low leverage spot, guy looks great.
Right, he's fine.
Ryan Helsley sucks in every situation.
Right.
So I don't even think it's about New Yorker pressure. I just think whatever it is, whether it's tipping pitches or it's an injury or something, he can't get guys out. Devin Williams has shown a clear line of, you know what? Put him in a 5-run game in the seventh inning, he'll strike the side out.
Maybe he's feeling pressure because he's a free agent. Have you ever seen something in a movie where a guy that's like, all right, if you do this for me, I'll give you half now, and if you complete the job, I'll give you the other half. Why doesn't Steve Cohen, he could write a check, just give this guy a year contract.
Now you got to stop.
Say
save for Lou Gowan.
It's not saving it for
anything.
Don't
give me a bit about Ryan Helsley giving him money.
It's not
please,
a bit. It's
please.
Just trying to get the guy relaxed. Okay. You want to cut him. Okay. I'm saying, how do we fix it?
Yeah, you say give him money.
Why not? They have plenty of it.
Why not? To put things in perspective, SNY Mets with a fantastic tweet. 13.6% of Ryan Helsley's career earned runs have now come as a Met.
Yeah.
13%?
He's been here for 3 weeks.
Oh, wow. I mean, think about it. He's already given up more runs as a Met than he did as a Cardinal. And he was a Cardinal for, 35 games. He's been a Met for 15 games. Mm. So it is remarkable, and it's unfortunate because it was a 3-2 game, and then Ryan Helsley set the game on fire. They currently trail 6-2. Let's go to Mike in Wall. What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. Pleasure. It's been a while, but you guys are always the best. Evan, I'm not going to say actually like Juan Soto, but you made a really good point before.
Thanks.
And it was something, as a longtime Yankee fan, and I hear Yankee fans complaining all the time, I'm doing the same thing. As a longtime Yankee fan, I keep complaining about them not being complete team. Defense. Lack of getting the runners in, all home runs or nothing, all of these things. And at the end of the day, you are 100% right. Yankee fans watch Yankee games and see other teams every once in a while. They don't watch tons of other teams' games. And if you do a deep dive into the stats, that's what baseball is now. And that's what people are getting really confused. And what Yankee fans are doing is comparing these Yankee teams to the late 90s, early 2000s.
Right. It's history.
And it's a different era completely. I mean, you take, Kiki, yeah, you're right, it's history. And you take a look at all of these major league teams, departments, front offices, look how many departments are dedicated to statistical analysis,
right,
and technology and all of these things. You want to get mad at something as a Yankee fan? Get mad at the fact that we treat the game now without a heartbeat.
Right.
Everything is based on stats, launch angle, everything else. I mean, you could go as far with the Volpe thing right now. He's struggling. Everybody's killing him. But you know what? I saw the kid in high school. He was Derek Jeter personified. Right center field, line drives, all those things. That was his strength. Yankees draft him, and what do they do the first couple years in the minors with him? Try to teach him launch angle and how to hit home runs. That's not Volpe trying to do that. That's baseball telling them, hey, a home run is better than three singles because it's harder to get three singles than a home run.
Right.
So we're going for home runs. We're doing this.
In the flaw, Mike, thank you for your call.
Great stuff.
It's really good stuff. The flaw is that on this team, you don't need Anthony Volpe to hit home runs.
Mm.
You don't. You need him to get on base, steal bases, like we thought he was going to be when he first came up 3 years ago. Felt like he was going to steal 30, 40 bases a season. Now he doesn't even get on base anymore. So, part of it is the flaw. Part of it is the flaw of the organization. It's the flaw of all of baseball, to be perfectly honest with you. But at the same time, he's still got to be better.
No doubt.
And he's got to be held accountable.
100%.
Something I've been sitting on for a week because it happened when we were both on vacation. And I wanted to see, I don't know if you saw this yet, but did you see Juan Soto? Well, actually, before I ask you that, I want to ask you this question. Who do you think is the leader slash captain of the New York Mets?
I mean, everybody says it's Lindor, so I guess it's him.
Okay. Now, here's Juan Soto talking to the New York Post about Starling Marte.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, he's literally the leader of this team. I feel like he's actually the captain of this team. He's bringing everybody together. He's bringing the energy that we need. He's the guy who's been stepping up every single time. It doesn't matter what. This continues, quote, he's actually the real deal of the team. He's the model of the team. Everybody, when they want to talk and get to know something or have a conversation, they can go to him. He's actually the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked Marte. He's been very injury prone. I'm not surprised by that. I'm surprised maybe he would verbalize it to that degree. I don't think he's taking a shot at Lindor. I'm sure some look at Sal's eyes already bugging out.
I'm curious how you don't think that.
Not an intentional one. I think sometimes things, not that it was misconstrued, I think it was an attempt to prop up Marte more than it was to downgrade Lindor. That's what I take from that.
And maybe that's why this has not been made a bigger deal, because people think that. I think everybody's missing the boat. You guys got to do the math. I mean, it is right there for everybody to see in plain daylight. Quote, talking about Marte, everybody assumes Lindor's the leader and captain of this team. Juan Soto is telling you he's not. Literally, quote, he's literally the leader of this team, referring to Marte. He's the real deal. He's actually the real deal. The model of this team. He said it multiple times. Like, that to me is a direct shot. Like, you couldn't be any more pointed. Direct shot from Soto to Francisco Lindor. Now, is it the biggest deal in the world? No. Like, not everybody's got to love each other, but...
Well, so now there's Soto-Lindor beef?
Oh, no, I don't know if there's beef. I'm just saying that is a clear...
I mean, direct shot. I mean, to me, it's a direct... Like...
It's a direct shot.
I don't see it that way. I don't hear it that way. It doesn't read. That doesn't mean that I'm right.
Right.
To me, it's really just an attempt to let everybody know and illuminate the effectiveness of Marte and what he brings to the table. Not render Lindor a phony or a fake leader or not the guy. I just don't take it that way. I don't.
I'm shocked. How?
Why?
If somebody said that about anybody other than Judge in the Yankee clubhouse, what would you think? Well, he's just trying to build up Ryan McMahon. You know, they said McMahon's the real deal. He's the leader.
Well, first of all, Ryan McMahon's been here two months. Marte's been here. This is year number four.
Yeah, well, pick a player.
And there's been evidence. Yeah. Marte's always the guy who leads the pictures.
Right.
So that's why I'm not that surprised by that. And if you think about that, which was a really...
So then who's the real deal? Is Lindor the leader or is it Marte?
You know, And I'm not trying to dismiss it. I don't really care. What's it matter? The real deal. I mean, Marte's gone after this year. His contract's up. So if he's such the real deal, you better make sure you sign him. Don't let him leave. I mean, what are they? If it's Lindor's the captain, when are they going to give him the C? When he's 37 and he's walking out the door? Well, I mean, is he the captain or not?
Maybe he's not.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But
that's a big deal.
No, but it doesn't mean, and again, I admit, I don't know that I'm right on this.
Right.
This is just how I'm interpreting Soto. I don't think there's an ounce of maliciousness there. Like, think about it. There's very easy things to... We saw Valdez last night cross up his catcher, and there's not a person with more than two brain cells that doesn't think that that was intentional.
Right.
We all think it was intentional. Because
right.
He lit up and he gave up a grand slam. What happened before that? That's very easy to read. This is a little trickier. I don't know. I just don't know why Soto, who is on a roll, is comfortable, Mets are in a good spot. This is last week, you said, right?
Yeah.
But he's still hitting
the Post well had it, yeah.
All right. But why would he feel compelled to throw this smoke bomb in the middle of the Mets locker room intentionally?
Maybe he doesn't like Lindor.
But why?
Why he doesn't like him, I have no idea. But clearly, this is, to me, I don't know how anybody could read this. And I'm sure you're not alone. What I'm saying is whoever's reading that and not taking it the way that I am is wrong.
Well, you can't say that it's wrong when it's your opinion. That's what you interpret. I don't interpret. So how am I wrong?
I'm not interpreting it. I'm reading it.
So am I.
Yeah.
Well, I'm listening to you read it.
But you also said that you thought Lindor is the leader of the team. Well, Juan Soto, a player on the team, is telling you he's not. And not only is he saying he's not, he's saying it. He's actually the real deal of the team. He's the model of the team. He's the real deal. He goes on to say that twice.
Let me ask you this.
He's literally the leader of this team.
If you're
Lindor, you would not be bothered by that?
If I had a great relationship with Juan Soto, I wouldn't be bothered by that. If I had one that was a little contentious, which I don't think that they have. I mean, geez. But if there was something, you know, bubbling beneath the surface, Sal, and I'm Lindor, I'd probably feel like, wow, that was an aggressive slide. He's trying to play me publicly.
Right.
But if that's the case. But there's also something to be said for Soto just getting there. He's never played with Marte, right? Pittsburgh. But no, he's never played with Marte. And him just being around an OG and being like, this is the unk.
Right.
This is the guy. Like, there's an age, even though Lindor's not in his
20s. Well, there is, and I don't want to get into this, but there is the Dominican, Puerto Rican.
Yeah,
thing.
It's a
real thing in baseball.
I hear you. The WBC. I mean,
well, I'm just saying, Dominican players, Puerto Rican players. I don't know the specifics.
But wasn't there also this thing like there was an issue? When was it? Was it with like? Well, we have like the McNeil. Like, there's also was there a Puerto Rican white thing? Like,
no.
Your teammates or you're not?
Yeah, well, I mean, Lindor and McNeil also had like.
No, I know
Lindor
they
choked them out.
But was it because of the different ethnicities?
No,
was just a problem that happened between two guys.
I'm just saying that is a real thing. And so I'm not saying in this particular.
Yeah, I know you're not. You mean in baseball, just in general?
100% in baseball.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. So and then one player here is PR, one player here is DR. Maybe that's I have no idea.
Well, then why was there
I didn't say it. He said it. No. I'm taking this as saying, good God, for somebody we all just assume Lindor is the leader of the team. Not according to Juan Soto, and not only not according to Juan Soto, it's not like, hey, Marte, because he did say this before. Marte helped me out here, and
he helped ingratiate him, like with the photos and the dugout.
This is different.
Synergy.
This is different. Quote.
It could be different. Go ahead, read it again. I know you love reading this.
This is the quote. I can't believe these quotes. When I read this, I was like, holy crap! Uh-huh. I wish I was on.
And I understand why you take some of that away. These words are biting if you believe that they were intentional, which I don't, but go ahead and read them again.
He's literally the leader of this team, talking about Starling Marte. I feel like he's actually the captain of this team. The whole thing was, Lindor's going to be captain, named captain. That is a boom, direct shot at Francisco Lindor, the captain of this team. He's talking about Marte, bringing everybody together, blah, 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 blah. Twice he says this. He's actually the real deal of the team, the model of the team. Everybody, when they want to talk and get to know something or have a conversation, they can go to him. He's actually the real deal. Those are words, dude, that, those words are not minced. They're not softened.
No, they're not. They're not, but it doesn't mean that they're intentional or that they're malicious. See, I hear it, and I hear a great compliment toward Marte. I don't hear a takedown hit job diss of Lindor. That doesn't mean that I'm right.
Right.
And by the way, if you go back, when you first asked me the question,
yeah.
And if you guys want to check this out, Free Odyssey app, if you just jump it in here, BT and Sal, of course, you said, who do you think is the Mets leader? And if you listen to my response, I didn't punctuate, it's absolutely Francisco Lindor, there's no doubt.
Right,
everybody
right.
said he's going to be the captain. I mean, it was kind of like, I guess it's Lindor. Everybody says it's Lindor.
Right.
That was my response. So I never really stamped him. I mean, I kind of go with the wave of direction here or momentum because everybody for 3 years has been telling me he's the captain.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't mean that he is the captain, but it also doesn't mean what Soto said means he's a bad guy or a bad leader or there's friction.
Yeah. I don't think that he's a bad guy or you know, not the leader. I'm just telling you what one of the prominent players said about the guy who everybody assumes is the leader.
Yeah.
I took that as
gotcha.
A shot from Soto, mm-hmm. direct shot. at Francisco Lindor.
One more thing. So this was what day again? When did this? When was this sent?
I don't know. I have it postmarked about 6 days ago, a week ago.
All right. So we were on vacation.
Yes.
Now, I worked last week, Monday and Tuesday. Then I was off the rest of the week. You worked Wednesday.
I think it was the day. It was after that.
Okay. So we've been on vacation. There hasn't been, even though we've been on vacation.
The 27th, so was that Wednesday that it came out off? That was the Wednesday.
Yeah, that Wednesday night.
Okay.
Yeah, Wednesday night.
Wednesday night. So, okay, so that night, that day I played golf. That night I had a football game, my son's game. We were both off. Even when I'm on vacation, there is not a day that goes by that I don't jump into, so I don't tweet, but read, watch games, Yankees, Mets, New York Post, all the website. Like, I do it every day. It's part of my routine. Even Christmas morning, I'll eventually get around. That's just what I do. The fact that this was a week ago, and there hasn't been a peep about it since, doesn't that kind of tell you that it wasn't really meant to be that way?
It tells me that this is the honest truth.
I got you. Go ahead.
It tells me that people are clueless. That's what it tells me. Now, if I were on the next day, we would have led with it. We would have led with that, 100% led with that. We weren't. Now, I can't speak for everybody else, and maybe other people just read it and don't think a big deal of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading in between the lines a little bit deeper into it. I'm also watching their interactions as I have from the beginning of the year throughout.
But be careful with the interactions, because some of the interactions or some of the body language early from Juan Soto was setting off signals for some that he wasn't happy being a Met.
Correct.
Which has been disproven.
Right.
So I wouldn't get too wrapped up in, is he happy? Is there interaction? Is he talking to Marte more? I'm saying he can. Right. I just wouldn't attach absolute value to it, because the first body language test of Juan Soto, he failed. And now he looks absolutely like he's the happiest guy in the world, being a Met.
Hoff, did Evan do this on the Rico at all? I'm assuming he's done 15 Ricos since we were...
Yeah, it's funny because he didn't do it until I think it was this past Sunday. So he waited a couple days to do it as well.
Oh, he was off.
Well, but we do a Rico every freaking night. Okay. Do you know this guy?
Yeah, well, that is true. Well, I'm saying he was off radio, though, Thursday, right. Friday, I believe.
But he did it Sunday night, and he has similar vibes as you as well. It feels like there's something more
there. What do you think?
What do I think? To go out of his way to make a point about Marte being the leader, where I know for a fact that Lindor, I feel like Lindor, it means more to him to be a captain, to be the leader of the team, to be the face of the team. So I feel like maybe there is something internal going on, because I feel like it is kind of a direct shot at him. By saying somebody else is the true captain, it's kind of a shot.
I mean, the other thing too here is that sometimes, no matter who we anoint or what we try to position, sometimes people are just more naturally inclined to be what they are. Like, maybe Marte's leadership is just easier. It comes more naturally, where with Lindor, all right, before Soto, best player, highest contract, tenured for a minute here. Right. Obviously, Pete's been here as well. But, like, it was, he's in the middle of the infield. He plays hard. He's a pretty good ball player. He's got great energy. Fans love him now. Make him the captain. That doesn't mean that was the right choice.
Right.
Like, the people's choice is not always the right choice.
Correct. He's not the captain.
No, right, they now haven't named him captain. Yeah, they're not going
and
to.
And maybe, who knows? Maybe he will be next year. I have no idea. Soto's not going to get to decide that, I wouldn't think.
No, but if you don't think, think about this. Soto just signed this monstrosity of a deal. If Soto really has an issue with Lindor, don't you think the Mets should be a little reticent stamping the guy that Soto just crushed, if you're right, the captain?
And maybe they are. I don't know. I have no idea what they're going to do, what they should. All I know is this. I'm siding with Soto. Like, if it meant getting rid of everybody else and keeping Juan Soto, that's what I'm doing, because I believe in him as a player, because I know what he's done, what he's capable of, all those different things. Doesn't mean he's the leader of this team. Doesn't mean they don't need Lindor and Alonso.
It could mean his instincts are right. It could mean. That what he just said could mean.
Again, I don't know. I'm just going based off of what I read. And to me, if there was any kind of speculation about how those two were getting along from the start of the year, whatever, those quotes are pretty.
In black and white. Dude. I want to hear them. I'm going to actually search these. Because
I don't know, because he spoke to the Post about it. I think it was Mike Puma.
Yeah, it was Puma. There's no audio.
No audio. You know why? Because think about when we had Boone on, okay? Yeah. And he said what he said about Judge, and then Judge said what he said about Boone's response to us. And it's when you read it, it's like, wow, Judge, kind of just railroaded his manager. When you listen to the tone and the inflection, which to me is always important. Like, I've got to hear the way somebody says something. And when they say it, you know, then I can have a better judgment. And I just think it got away from Judge, and he didn't mean it that way towards Boone. I'd like to have the evidence with Soto. If it was kind of like casual, that's one thing. If it was like stern, that's enough. But I guess we don't have the audio.
And by the way, I don't think this is a huge deal as it pertains to the Mets and their success. I'm just saying that those were eye-popping quotes for me to read. And it is at least intriguing. It doesn't mean they're not going to win or have success. You don't have to, and not everybody has to love each other.
Yeah, well, Reggie Nettles, Reggie Munson. No, I hear you.
The one thing I will say about Soto, we can go back to any quote which we've criticized, overanalyzed him saying about the, oh, I'm missing money on the table by not going to the All-Star game. We've killed him for things that he said. He's always been upfront about everything.
Yeah.
So
he doesn't hold any punches.
No,
there.
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't take it that way. You guys do. We hear it different. Listen, does it mean we maybe monitor a little bit more? Don't think your partner's not going to be looking at every interaction after a home run a little bit more closely. I mean, I will.
You watch, because I even noticed it the other day. Which home run was it? He's hit so many here recently. It was one the other day. I think it was at home. Yeah, it was at home. Soto hit one, uh-huh. And I am.
Yeah.
The antennas are even higher.
I'm going to jump in on it, yeah.
And it was just a simple like
a little pound.
Low five or whatever, where everybody else
wasn't the whole dance routine.
I don't think he was in the picture. Yeah. Now again, they don't have to like it. I don't know if they like each other or not, but they don't have to and don't care.
Yeah.
You know, half the 86 Mets hated each other, whatever it may be. But you go out there and have success as a team, which the Mets are having. I just could not believe. Hey, it's refreshingly honest. I could not believe those quotes from Juan Soto.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.